So they've dropped a third of their points cost.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, we are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
What up?
Hey. It's the only way. Star 40K in 2023.
That doesn't rhyme at the end. Oh, you added the heat. Okay.
I work with what I've got, all right? 2023 does not rhyme with much.
Well, it doesn't rhyme with hay, so I
guess. Obviously, we've established that. Moving on. There's only one way to be sure, though.
You got to try it. You got to run it out and see what happens.
That's right.
So, hey, look, new points, new balanced data slate.
New everything, my man.
Yeah. This is... It's a weird one. So there's been some people that have speculated and talked about stuff leading up to this. And some of the rumors, I mean, you probably heard by now, by the time you're hearing this, that it's actually got released a couple of days before you'll hear the show, weren't correct. Like, people were really concerned that, like, Thunderhammers were going to be free and life was going to get, real hard, for people that fought armies that had a lot of Thunderhammers in them. But that's not the case.
No, it's not the case. So you're alluding to jumping the shark on the fact that a lot of war gear for certain armies has become free in these points changes.
Yeah, it's included as part of the unit. And, I guess we can talk about how we feel about that.
I have some feelings.
So obviously what we're referring to is the balanced data slate and the points changes that everyone should have in their hot hands and stuff. And if you play with points or if you play in match play, then things like, this are kind of relevant to maybe what you choose to include in your army list or how you build your army. And, there's a lot also about building your army that may, change over the next little bit from what we've seen. With Arcs of Omen detachments and whatever, but it all comes kind of down to the unit upgrades and how much the models cost in each unit and that kind of stuff. So I don't even know where we start.
Well, it's such a wholesale change, just a holistic change to how we play a match play game. It's really hard to know where to start. To sum up the points changes, though, it looks to me like G-Dub's taken a buff the bottom two, nerf the top two in the, air quotes, competitive standings, and then do some little adjustments in the middle. And that seems to have held true. To TLDR, straight down, Harlequins and Tyranids both got heavy-handed adjustments. In Tyranids, possibly the biggest points adjustment army-wide that we have seen in the modern game.
Tyranids have been like real high on the hog as far as like win percentages and tournament representation and that kind of stuff.
And they haven't been able to stop them. Like, G-Dub and the balance team and the rules team have nerfed Tyranids, the Tyranid book. Like, are we up to four times? Is this the fourth time? And up until this one, they were just like, one nail in the coffin, nah, it's still alive. It's still alive. Okay, set the thing on fire, throw it off a bridge.
Wasn't it a buff? And then a nerf, it's like it's not really a nerf, a balance, an update.
Yeah. So I think they just kind of decided to throw the baby out with the bathwater and like let him be at the bottom for a little bit. I mean, it's still a very strong book, but so they had some changes in the balance data slate, which took the two most egregious parts of the way they played, which was spore mines, which were free and just got in the way and blew up and could be spawned ad nauseum, sometimes in excess of 10, 15 dropping in a single turn, which you had to spend guns or walk through to remove. It's really kind of toxic. And then, of course, the flyer, which would run out with the Reaper of Obliterax and wings, kill anything in the game just about, and then spend some CP and run back to its Tyrant Guard so you couldn't interact with it. So that's been changed. Spore mine's been changed. And then it feels like they've gone up 100%, but it's not. It's more like everything's gone up between 10 and 40%, which is very impactful.
So let's... you talk about spore mines changing. Let's talk about how they changed and how people were using them and how the build changed. So after the most recent change, the change before this, then Leviathan, we saw kind of maybe shift down a peg, and some other lists came up, and those other lists utilized spore mines.
Exactly right. So the way the spore mines would get used, you would take a spore assist as a fortification detachment, and then you would take a number of harpies or biovores, most likely biovores after the Leviathan change. And then what you would do is you would just make free spore mines to gum up your opponent, to get in the way. Now, everyone says, oh, but you can walk through spore mines. Yeah, sure, you can walk through them at a cost, but you cannot land on them. So what people were doing is that if I moved, you know, 12 inches with, say, an Imperial Knight who can walk over them, can walk over them anyway, what they do is that they land at where the middle point of your base would be, or a portion of your base would be. And if you can't cross them and land on the other side of them, you have to land in front of them. And so therefore, it costs you whatever amount of their base that they dislodged plus an inch of engagement range, and then the spore mines got to explode. So it was really, really awkward, and they just got in the way, gummed up everybody, and were an absolute pest.
No, and did
mortal wounds
too. Like, they did damage.
Yeah, exactly right. It's not like they just got in the way and did nothing. They got in the way and hurt you to remove. And I mean, they were very easy to kill, but I mean, there were some armies out there that would have to, you know, didn't have a bunch of bolt pistols, hurricane bolters, things of that ilk, las guns, to just pick them up willy-nilly without costing them efficiencies. And so they were just almost like a tax. They were a movement tax, and they were a shooting tax that you would place on your opponent. Hell, even things that would, you know, try and usually be smiting to get premium damage on units would have to smite through a spore mine. And so it was just a tax you would place on your opponent's ability to play the game.
Yes, and so now what's different?
Well, now you have to pay for the thing. Hallelujah. They're not free. So designer's note here. So first it says delete the last sentence from the following abilities: seed spore mines, spore mine assist, seed spores, biovores, harpy, spore assist. Designer's notes: this means this unit cannot create spore mines or mucilid spore models for free. Reinforcement points are required for such models to be on the battlefield. This is a phenomenal change, but somewhat of a death knell to things like biovores, which their whole modus operandi was their ability to spore mines. So it is I admit what's happened to Tyranids is very heavy-handed, but transitioning, happy days, Astartes players. Happy freaking days.
Well, you also mentioned the overrun and stuff like that.
Of course.
Yeah, so there's some other changes to the Tyranids that did have kind of made them a little bit more predictable or manageable on the table. And so they changed the second sentence of the overrun stratagem to read, select one Hive Tendril core unit from your army that made a charge move this turn. Previously, what had been happening is like Hive Tyrants were overrunning backwards retreat behind Tyrant Guard, or, you know, make themselves either unchargeable or something. So they were able to get up there, do a bunch of damage, and then retreat and then not be exposed to harm. And, you know, given a lot of more life to that unit, very powerful. And now that has been toned down to where it only works on probably the units that it was intended for. But who's to say what the intent was?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right.
So it's interesting to see the difference in this between Age of Sigmar and Warhammer 40K, because I feel like in general, in Age of Sigmar, they like to be light-handed. So they like to change one thing, maybe two things, and then see what happens in the meta, right? Was that sort of what was happening with Tyranids before, or was it just like blanket changes to a lot of things and it still wasn't changing their win rates? Like, what was going on before?
Well, that's a really good point, because we haven't seen such a holistic change points-wise, let alone balance-wise and mission-wise, since about the middle of 8th edition. We had a similar experience with Yanari when they came out in 8th edition, where they had like three or four incremental changes before they just deleted them and said, no, Yanari doesn't work anymore. But yeah, it feels like it's been a long time since we had something this heavy-handed. Like, to all intents and purposes, I think most of the balanced artist plates have been really quite reasonable. So a great point by you. This is a big deal for the game at the moment. This is like almost a return to some of the early 8th edition stuff, where we felt like we were a bit strapped to the roller coaster. What was going to go up? What was going to go down? When things went down, how far down did they go? Like, how big were the nerfs? How big were the buffs? Because I got to say, both the nerfs and the buffs, when you take everything together, the way you build new detachments, the way that the points changes, the way the balanced data slate changed, this is, I have to say, this is 9.5. This is almost half again a new edition for how different this is from everywhere we've played 9th edition so far.
I mean, don't you feel like AOC was 9.5?
Armor Contempt.
Yeah, I mean, look at how much it adjusted, right? Like, I mean, sure, 9.1, 9.2, 9.2.5, 9.5, whatever. It's just, I feel like AOC and then the removal of AOC and the impacts on indirect and everything. I mean, I feel like the balance data slates have been momentous. There's been quite a bit of momentum behind them that have driven the game, which is pretty remarkable from a mechanics viewpoint, design, and how they're trying to go about it. And so removing AOC, for example, and then adding these other aspects in it, I agree, like, it, you're definitely looking at another version or an updated rendition of the current edition.
Yeah, and perfect segue there. Armor Contempt, added 6 months ago, removed. No longer there. So it's interesting to see whether this is a net boon, because, of course, with removal of Armor Contempt, we've seen huge, sweeping changes to the way most power armor will be played. Sans Sisters of Battle, because they've only pretty much stayed the same and have Armor Contempt removed. But everyone else has received something for the change. I should have included T-Sons and Death Guard when I said Sisters of Battle, because, yeah, unfortunately, they're pretty much, that's what I talked about when I said the middle stayed about the same. Those are examples of factions that stayed the same, if not got a little bit backhandedly worse, whereas a lot of the Space Marine factions, well, all the Space Marines plus Grey Knights to be included, got sweeping points reductions in compensation for Armor Contempt being removed.
I'm digging that. And we can jump to some
of the Blood Angels play.
Yeah. Well, hey, just wait. Wait till we talk about some other stuff. I mean, look. I want to say, I was going to make some kind of like comment about it. I've never been more proud to have a fully painted Blood Angel army, but that's not true. I've always been very proud to have a fully painted Blood Angel army. There have been, you know, certain times where they have been a lot more, I guess, useful and dominant on the tabletop, and that ain't slowing down anytime soon, hopefully. I don't want to jinx it. But as Armor Contempt, we mentioned, gone away, and then also things like Flamers, like Jump Demons, very little change with the Ballast Day of Sleep for the Demons, except the big thing about Flamers now needing to roll to hit.
Oof. I mean, something had to be done.
Is it bad, though? Is that even bad, though?
Honestly, I don't think people might say the sky's falling. This isn't a death knell for the Flamers, because I don't think their points changed, did they? Let me quickly double check if that's correct. But yeah, I believe their points stayed the same. So they're still 25 points per model, and now they need to roll to hit. And so what that does, it takes a third of their efficiencies, right? Because they hit on their Bliss skill 3+. So, you know, you get your D6 plus 3. Let's say it's just 6. Instead of having 6 auto hits, you'll probably have 4 auto hits. But you're much more susceptible to minus to hit in that interaction now, which all of a sudden becomes a good balancing point for them. Like, if you are afraid of Flamers being -1 to hit, you'll cut off another level of efficiency. But I think this is a good change, and you might not see people just slamming, you know, windmill slam 18 into every list now. You might see one or two units a much more reasonable take on them.
I don't know, the Flamers, like, the fact that they exist, all that utility is still very much there. They're still difficult to charge because it's a lot of shots. There are ways to make them hit better. I mean, if you need to. I mean, this kind of, it's not the. I think this does make them slightly more reasonable in your mind when you're discussing everything you could possibly do with them, and then you don't also include the hit automatically. People are like, you know what? Maybe that's not so bad.
I think it's still
pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's totally fine. And once again, they got a backhanded buff with the Armor Contempt being gone. They crack Astartes so much easier than they used to. Like, you'd play into Terminators, and then you would just be like, ha, taking a 2+ because I'm in cover against your -2. Don't care because I ignore one. And now if they're in cover, it's a 3+. If they're not in cover, 4+. They do actually a lot more somehow. They feel like they do the same amount of damage, even though they're hitting a third less of the time.
Yeah, there we go. So Flamers, Demons seem to be kind of untouched. For the most part, I don't think they got not a bunch of points changes.
Yeah, I'm just about to check. I don't believe they got any points changes, as in just for Flamers. I think they're still.
I mean, as far as Demons in general, I mean, they didn't get like anything that's too drastic, I don't think.
I think it was just the Greater Demons, if I remember right. I think it's I know Bloodthirsters stayed the same, but one of their buffs went up, which is the Indomitable Onslaught, the wound gating went up a couple of points, which
went up 10 points, right? Enough. I think it's up 50 points now.
Yeah, it's 50 points now, yeah. And then a couple of other little bits and pieces, like the Skull Cannon, which I already thought was good, is now 90 points. So another reduction there. Flesh Hounds went down as well. So a couple of little bits and pieces. But yeah, just double checking. Flamers are still 25 points per model. Lord of Change went up as well. That's right. That's the other one.
It went up. Okay, there we go.
It did. I think that might be a little bit unwarranted, but there is a lot of fear out there just because the amount of mortal wounds that guy can put out on a good day is fearsome.
And if we can jump to, you know, back off in points, but back to the Ballast Data Slate, the indirect fire rule that used to exempt Astra Militarum from the Neg 1 Blixit skill is gone. So the Neg 1 indirect fire rule is still there, but it no longer exempts Astra Militarum.
This bothered you a little bit, didn't you? Didn't it?
It, yeah, I mean, come on. Now, to be honest, though, is that I think the Astra Militarum were a lot different. They kind of needed that. They, you know, they're missing some of the modern, cool things that we see in codexes now. And that was a nice little, hey, take this. You're supposed to rain down fire. We understand that's a big portion of your book right now. Go ahead and do it. Get you by. And now it's not there. And I haven't played with it to the extent to know whether or not that really impacts the effectiveness of the new weapons and stuff, or even what you take in an army list right now. I'm not sure that you're going to be in the current army list actually focuses on indirect fire.
I mean, it would if they were still exempt. 100%. As it sits, I think you can still make 1 to 2 good indirect pieces, and most likely those in the current format are going to be the new ordnance batteries, because you can take them with Castellan Creed, the new Creed model, and then she can give them all sorts of juicy orders in addition to +1 strength. If you were to take that, then you could still have 1 good piece, if not 2 good pieces, and you could get by. But I do think the days of oops all indirect for guard are pretty much numbered. And I suppose it does lean you to making a more balanced guard list, which isn't very guard-like. I mean, how do you guys, we're all guard players here. How do you all feel about it? I feel like guard more than any other army like leans itself to skewed, sometimes nonsense, maybe tyrannids of just as much.
I feel like Red is in his feelings over there.
Lay it on me, big boy.
When you find something that works, like, you should double down on it, right? Like, there's no need to, I guess we've gone too much in this direction. We should probably stop and go somewhere else. Like, that's not how weapon development necessarily works, right? I mean, you do need to be prepared with contingencies and all, but there was something too, I think, the kind of outside of the game mechanics, but, you know, we all go back to the age of the Flyrant, right? With how many were there? 7?
At that Adepticon before they added the rule of 3. Yeah.
Before the rule of 3, right? Like, I mean, why would the hive mind stop making
Flyrants,
right? Like, if that's what's going to work, you're going to use all your biomass to do that. And that kind of goes back to the game, right? The game itself. You're given 2,000 points and you're fighting an opponent at 2,000 points, and then you're left to find the correlation of forces between those. And that's a real thing. Militarily, the correlation of force matrix of, okay, what's my parity? Right now, we all go into games 2,000 to 2,000, technically point for point, right? Like, it's never there's never a disparity. And so with that, there are some cool, I mean, this goes back into all these different game styles. We're sitting here talking about competitive aspect, and there really are a lot of these other, I liked the open war cards. There's this whole part of the open war cards where if I take 500 points and you take 2,000 points, for example, I get a special card that says, if I accomplish this one objective, I win the game no matter what. Like, it doesn't matter what turn it is or whatever, if I just do this one thing. And so, like, okay, I've got to play these 500 points as well as I can against your 2,000 points under this aspect. And then, like, you know, you go back to the game and the mechanics. Is it really made for that gameplay? Not consistently, but in a fun way it could be. I mean, and again, the whole hobby aspect of it, and not just the hobby, but the gameplay aspect, not just purely, you know, it's almost never really just a chessboard, right? We're not playing on a rigid, structured table or chessboard, for example, and we don't all have the exact same pieces. So why can't we lean into certain things? You know, the knights do a good job of that. You can make some Necron Lord of War lists. The guard player with, you know, 3 Bane Blades or whatnot. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff out there. And I don't think that people should feel... Certain armies should, because it's mechanically how they kind of work, but there's certain armies also on the other end that I don't think should feel compelled to balance certain ways. And I do think the new Arcs of Omen detachment allows that to a certain degree. And so I am interested to see what people come up with from the freedom that comes with that newer structure.
Mm. Adam, I'm really interested. Why do you... Okay, so one, how do you feel Guard should play? And two, why do you think the new book doesn't allow you to do that effectively?
So I feel like Guard should be kid in a candy store. You have you have exactly four flavors, but you can enjoy that flavor to your absolute heart's content. You want to be all tanks, you want to be all mechanized infantry, you want to be all foot infantry, you want to be all artillery. And then, you know, with every iteration therein, you know, be that mechanized infantry, that's Militarum Tempestus or et cetera, or so on and so on. And the way I feel like they currently play at the moment is either all Lehman Russes.
Do you mean the new Codex once it's in people's hands, or like that's what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, no, so I mean, that's my view. My view of Guard as a Guard player has always been as thus. Like, it is a bit of a, you can go, you have these like four or five ways to play, and you can go as crazy as them as you please. And that's kind of one of the strengths of the book. Whereas a lot of other things, like, you know, for Astartes, for an example, have usually been balanced around having a certain a bit of everything approach, you know, a well-balanced army on the table.
But Guard, you feel like if you want 1,000 guardsmen, you could always do that. If you wanted all tanks, you could do that. Exactly, if you wanted all mortars, you could do that. Yeah.
Exactly right. It's perfectly said. The way the book is now, I believe it gives you one of two options, or it leans you one of two ways, and that being a only tread, like as in like Lehman Russes and Sentinels, Dawns, you know, of course, Tank Commanders, those variants, those chassis spammed, Control Seed, Control V'd throughout the whole force. Arcs of Omen makes that very, very good for you as well. Or it is the fully a bit of everything approach. A couple of transports, a couple of guard squads, a couple of Kashkan squads, a Dawn, Tank Commander, Lehman Russes, a bit of everything, which I think is only good for the game, but possibly worse for the guard players.
Just like a word, a feel. You're going with feel right now, right?
I'm going with feel and flavor. Okay. When I look about what the best looking guard lists will look like, it's either one of those two. And those are the things I feel like reading through that book, it tells me are the strongest choices to make, or the things that will benefit me the most.
With I've struggled a bit. I should say struggled with it. I had to really be looking at some of the pictures and stuff that you've seen online and the codex and that kind of stuff, is that I've actually kind of come to peace with like a couple of Cadian officers hanging out in my Catachin crew.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm of the opinion that how the guard book is now structured, If you had a Catachan command squad models and you called them Cadian, sure, mate.
Yeah. No, there's going to be some Catachan stuff in there. But I mean, conceptually, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, exactly right. But moving back to the balance slate, essentially Guard got pretty much dodged in this slate, right? Apart from the removal of the indirect fire, they didn't get touched.
Yeah, exactly right.
Which is fair. I mean, similar to Demons, not much was needed. They're a very new book. I actually had a fun discussion after I first unpacked this stuff with a mate of mine, and we talked about the codexes that have never been seen in the Balanced Data Slate. GSC and T-Suns have never appeared in the Balanced Data Slates, to our knowledge.
Really? I think you're right.
Just never needed.
No,
just
there had to have been perfect, some GSC. Oh, no, they'd still be here.
It would still be here. Yeah, perfect out of the gate, mate. Never needed it. And funnily enough, Chaos Space Marines, like the generic Chaos Space Marines Codex, is only now just being listed. And it's only, which we should talk to. Because for a while, Creations of Bile, the trait is on, you will fight on death if you have not fought. And now it's fight on a 4+. Essentially, it's been changed to, which I think is a lot more reasonable. What is not reasonable is that they left the very bad nerf on the Dark Sated Harlequins rather than reverting it to this one, which would have been a nice precedent to set.
It's about balance between and what you want the armies to do kind of thing. And Creations of Bile ended up being a go-to pick for a lot of players that weren't, you know, let's say particularly loyal to one particular faction.
In addition, it became a default should your meta, your environment, your player base become very heavily melee skewed. Like, should you have a lot of Sisters players, Blood Angels players, Orc players, Creations of Bile just goes up exponentially in power versus armies that have to come fight you. So you always get return for being creations of bile over Black Legion, Word Bearers, etc. Interesting. So remember at the start I said the two, it sounds like they really went after the two worst performing factions and the two best performing factions. Best performing being Tyranids, Harlequins, the worst performing being Astartes, generic Space Marines, not Grey Knights, generic all-encompassing Space Marines, and AdMech. Now, it's an interesting, do you guys know the state of AdMech right now?
In reference to what?
Well,
the rusty 32's back. Is that what we're saying?
Not quite. But the state of that faction is right now. The best thing that they have going for them is the Skitarii Veteran Cohort, which is a way to build your army. It's an army of renown in which you take only the Skitarii models, and you get a bunch of great buffs, a bunch of great strategies.
Everybody overlooks Extellan robots. Come on,
it's true. Well, that as of the 1st of January, we don't know. You know. Information pending, because these could all be all these supplements and armies around could be renewed by Games Workshop at any point. But as per their document, their validity document, that no longer exists. The Skitarii Veteran Cohort has been annulled, as along with things like House Raven, but a multitude of other armies renowned supplements. But in exchange, they finally got Core added to Breaches and Cataphron Destroyers, which have their troops choices. I believe they should have been Core for a long time. I feel like GW was afraid to give it to them lest they become a juggernaut unit. And then one of the best aspects of the Skitarii Veteran Cohort was that everyone got a 5+ invuln instead of a 6+ invuln, which now they've given you in the balanced data slate. So I'll read this out verbatim. Change the Bionics ability for every Adeptus Mechanicus data sheet to read. Models in this unit have a 5+ invulnerable save. This affects the following units: Skitarii Rangers, Skitarii Vanguard, Cataphron Breachers, Cataphron Destroyers, Servitors, Iron Strider Ballistari, and Sidonian Dragoons. They all now get that what they lost. So GW is very conscious of the Veteran Cohort going away and just decided, hey, we're going to give Core to the other two troops choices. In addition, here's that 5+ that we took away. It's back army-wide now.
There we go. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and jump more into the points and continue to kind of spout about this stuff. See you in a minute.
Yep.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everyone. Still got everybody here. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to check out our sponsors here in the new year. Just as important as ever. It means a whole lot to us and them. We're jumping around because that's just what we do. We the things that matter to most to us and try to bring as much as we can that matters to y'all. And, points change is kind of a big thing. And if it affects, what we include in the army, how we even consider what we consider, worth it, valuable, effective, efficient. I have to do an update on the family too. Is that now that my oldest has decided he wants to play Warhammer 40K, my youngest has now decided he wants to play Warhammer 40K.
That's how it works.
Oh yeah.
And prefers the Necrons.
It's a fine choice.
I said the Necrons are very. I was hesitant to say easy to paint. but I said you've got a lot of flexibility and how quickly you can get him on the table. So maybe that is a great starter choice for him. He's 11.
Sure.
Easy to paint, not so easy to put together.
Yeah, don't let him near the Tomb Blades.
Well, I think he's got this. One, he likes skeletons and stuff like that. So, there he goes. But he also saw me painting some Necrons for a buddy of mine, a couple years ago. And he's like, I'm thinking, and I've got this idea in my head, about this, this orb being surrounded by technology and stuff. Is that something? I'm like, ooh, let's go check out Silent King again,
You did Mephrit, right?
Yeah, that's the color scheme that we did. But he says he wants favorite color's blue. Yeah, so we figure something out. Is there a Necron color scheme that's blue? Dynasty?
I actually don't know.
Well, yeah. Thocked. There's a couple. There's a blue. There's definitely a blue one.
And I will say for Xenos players, they're very forgiving on the color schemes you choose. So he'll be fine. But I want to get him an update on that. That was really cool. Something to jump into. It's kind of strike while the iron's hot, while they're enthusiastic about wanting to know more about the game.
Nice.
We're talking about points. Before I got distracted.
<Yeah. laughs> Let's get to the elephants in the room. So, Astartes. Just about, with a couple of exceptions, a couple of quite clever exceptions, No one pays for upgrades anymore. They're just mostly free. Sky is not falling. Everyone pays for their Thunder Hammers, just about. I think the only exception being regular Terminators, like Assault Terminators, don't play for the Thunder Hammers. They're just 33 points per model. Take whichever variant you like. But Vanguard veterans still pay for their upgrades. Company veterans still pay for their upgrades. So a couple of savvy choices there, because we all know how powerful those have been in the past. But here's the big one. Remember, you guys remember that unit with the jump pack and the booster boots from Mario Brothers? they might be good now.
Inceptors, I think, is what they're called. Yeah.
That's right. An IN word. You could have said anything right there, and most people would have nodded. Correct. But Inceptors are now 40 points, regardless of which gun you take, and that's a big deal.
Ooh, how much were they before?
I can't believe that was 60 or
80 points. They were 40 points apiece, but you paid 10 extra points for the Plasma Exterminator. Yeah.
So they've dropped a third of their points cost.
Yeah, let that sink in.
Oof. Yeah. It's a thing. They are hellacious amounts of damage, like 2d3 plasma shots per guy, up to 6 in a unit. So, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility to get like in the range of 25 plus 30-ish plasma shots, you know. So what is that? So it's 2d3 averaging 4 across 6 guys. Like, it's pretty hellacious.
And you can overcharge them for strength 8, 2 damage.
Yep. AP 3, 2 damage. Yep. Dark Angels, 3 damage. they might be the best unit out of Space Marines coming out of this thing. Just for 240 points, getting 6 of them that you can combat squad. It's like, you can take, if you want to do it, you can take 18 of them and not be spending a third and be spending under 750 points. Like, it's pretty nuts how good they are.
Yeah, you had to spend 20 points to get the 2 Plasma Exterminators. So that was, like, you're not kidding. You've cut it by a third.
A third, yeah. So they're really, really big winners out of this. But, you know, there are some other great choices here that lost a lot of their cost. I mean, Devastator's squads only pay for the multi-melters now. So every other option, you know, notably being Grav, is free.
Well, I saw that. Also, like Last Cannons. Like, how do I feel about, you know, spending 100 points for 4 Last Cannons?
And now, not spending any points for 4 Last Cannons.
Well, I mean, you get the whole squad. You get the bodies and the Last Cannons for the 100 points.
Another one's Eradicators. Used to spend a couple of points for the heavy melter rifle over the standard. And then in addition, you spend another 10 points to get the multi-melters. Now, they're all free. So they actually got a pretty hefty decrease in their points as well, somewhere in the region of about 50. I think it's about 35 to 45 points. So that's pretty nice too. And then there's just sweeping points reductions on everything. Everybody remember the Iron Hands triple repulsor executioner build?
Yes.
250 points for repulsor executioner with every upgrade. 250. What was that? What was the points of the Hecaton land fortress that everyone's saying the sky was falling? Was it 250? I think it was.
I mean, was it 250 or 290? Okay.
I was 250, and they put it up to 300. And so now for 750 points, you get your triple repulsive executioners back. Who's happy about that? No one.
That's a tank that has not caught on, and I don't know that this point change is going to necessarily make it catch on, but, you know, hey.
So the thing that's going to make it catch on, mate, is not the points. It's the fact that, and this is a perfect segue, in the balanced data slate, there's been 2 fundamental changes for how Space Marines play. And this is just in the data slate, not Armors of Renown, Arcs of Omen or anything. So now they've essentially, so remember the second 8th edition Codex came out, gave us the doctrines, and we used to be able to stay in whatever doctrine you wanted. And then the 9th edition Codex came out and said that you must progress your doctrines. I think even was done in an FAQ during that last 8th edition Space Marines Codex. And then the 9th edition Codex was the same adoption. We had, you know, have to start in Devastator, then turn 2 has to be tactical.
Yeah, you can't just live in Devastator anymore like Iron Hands players were doing. Yes.
You can now. You can just stay in whichever one you want. You start in Devastator, and you can just stay in Devastator all turn. Or you can go to Tactical, stay Tactical all game. Turn 3, you can go to Assault and stay in Assault all game. So essentially, they've almost undone the nerf and reverted it back to that second. It works the same as it did in the second 8th edition Space Marine Codex. In addition to the second dot point here, add the following bullet point to the detachment's abilities of Adeptus Astartes detachments. At the end of your command phase, if one or more Adeptus Astartes troop units from your army are within range of an objective marker you control, that objective marker remains under your control unless your opponent controls it at the end of any subsequent phase. So sticky objectives is the term we usually use for this, and it's now being granted regardless of the mission, to Astartes' troops.
That is pretty good.
It's not nothing, mate.
Well, the fact that you can, you don't have to necessarily dedicate premium units, elite units, just hanging out in the backfield.
Well, I think the biggest reason here is that for the long, I don't quite think G-Dub knows how to buff Space Marine troops without making them too good. And right now they're not. Right now they're not good enough. Is the deal? They don't do any damage. They do, and they're medium level durable, but they just lost Armor Contempt, so they're not even that durable. So what's the best way? What we want to soup them up like they were in 8th edition and just make a unit of intercessors a world-ending unit all of a sudden because it double shoots at Ren 2 or Ren 3 with a Thunder Hammer in there where it makes combat, et cetera, et cetera. No, add utility to them. And this transitions into the Arcs of Omer stuff. Troops will get you a bunch of extra bonuses on your secondaries. Stuff like if troops take the assassination secondary, if the troops kill a character, you get a command point. There's a bunch of other little almost Easter eggs in there if troops manage to do the thing. So I think this is a great way of making Astartes troops viable without buffing just all their guns, all their weapons, all their attacks and stuff. And what the tricky thing of this does is that you take Phobos units, you infiltrate onto an objective, you go first, you sticky that objective, and then you just run back into your own lines. And now your opponent has to walk out into the firing arcs, get chewed up to try and stop you just getting points for free.
I don't mind that.
It's pretty juicy, actually. Well, for you, mate, this is perfect because you get to cap all the objectives and then rush them like you want to with Blood Angels.
Yeah, you don't. No points hanging out back. I'm telling you, I am digging that.
Never need to turn around, mate.
We're talking about Sanguinary Guard for a moment. I know it's not the first time people have heard Sanguinary Guard. Not surprised that I brought it up either. Is that they don't pay for their pistols anymore.
True.
So the plasma and melta pistols, so they're really relevant in the demon world right now because it helps you like fight the bloodthirsters, and that's a big problem. Well, helps you fight anything, you know, with Blood Angels in the current form without investing points struggle with things that have the wound gaps, the wound gates, like you refer to them, and having, you know, maybe an additional, I don't know how many, 10 melta pistols, you know, helps improve those odds a little bit. I don't know who likes getting shot by melta pistols.
Nobody likes getting shot. Funny enough, there was a very strong player taking a bunch of melta pistol death company to an event previously, and on their Sanguinary Guard as well. So it's cool. Like that guy is just like rubbing his hands together. Everything just got better. But yeah,
when people were freaking out, thinking that, you know, that Thunderhammer is going to be free, I'm like, oh man, death company going to be great. No.
Well, I think they just went down in base points, didn't they? Like they just got cheaper.
A couple of points cheaper, but still, you still pay for the juicy upgrades.
So 23 points for a death company with a jump pack now. That seems pretty good, mate.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm not complaining in the slightest. I'm not even lamenting the fact that the Thunder Hammers weren't free. I'm just mentioning that was, you know, something that was, that has had, you know, I guess some of the match players' blood pressure up.
So one more thing I want to talk about. I mentioned how Harlequins had gotten some big nerfs. Well, one big nerf, and then I didn't tell you what it was, and I feel like I have to complete that. So there's one dot point that has been added to the Harlequin section, which is fair to say it's got a couple of paragraphs in it. And this, I don't know if there's ever been a more impactful dot point in a balanced data slate, but this one is pretty hefty. Worsen the invulnerable save of every Harlequin's model by one. If a Harlequin's model has an improved invulnerable save by any means, e.g. the Prismatic Blur stratagem, that invulnerable save is also worsened by one.
See, I'm of the opinion here. They don't know what they're doing. Like, let me tell you that the most reliable number in Warhammer 40,000 is a 5+ invulnerable save.
Demons have been built on that for years.
I can roll 5+ all day.
Firstly, this is a lot more impactful than it just looks. I mean, on paper, this is really huge. This is just making the army worse, straight up. Just
it is. All jokes aside, it definitely is.
But what this snowballs into is, like it already denotes, it makes a bunch of the stratagems worse, a bunch of the stratagems that improve your invuln. And then here's the other big deal. Laughing God dice, you know, Luck of the Laughing God. The core mono-detachment mechanic for Harlequins which kind of balanced off the fact you'd get to have a rerollable 4+ if you wanted to use those dice to help save yourself. How much less value do they have now that they pivot off a 5+? Defensively, I mean. Does this mean that you just exclusively use them to do other stuff? Like, I only use these for offense now because they're way more worthless on defense? Because this worsens a lot more than just the invulnerable save of the army. This worsens a bunch of the core mechanics in the synergy as well.
That's a tough call. I guess you got to kind of think about where you really needing them to be defensive anyway, or was that just a fallback plan when your strategy went completely south?
So yeah, when the codex came out, it was obvious that they were too defensible, right? Because then we saw light get nerfed twice now. Just not light has been directly nerfed. In addition to the Dice of the Laughing God has been nerfed in addition. So they were too durable for what they were meant to do. I suppose they were meant to always be a glass cannon, but there's glass cannon that's toughness 3. So I mean, at the end of the day, when a guardsman's essentially in combat, you've got the same save as a guardsman, the same defensive profile as a guardsman. They've got a 5 up armor save. You've got a 5 up invuln.
And you're 3 times as many points.
Yeah, it starts to be a bit rough. I think
maybe 5 times as many points.
Yeah, this for me, I think was pretty over heavy handed. But I don't know what else you could do at this point. They've slapped so many things onto the Harlequin book in the balanced data slates that maybe they were just the same with his hands up in the air, same with Tyrion's, and they're just like, nuke him, hit the big red button.
So I have a question actually about Harlequins, and it's something that I've been sort of thinking about for a while, but there's not a lot of people who actually play Harlequins even competitively. Am I right?
Yep, absolutely right.
The number of players, you mean? Yeah.
Right. So is it just that the Harlequins players are real good, maybe? Mm-hmm. And maybe they didn't need so heavy of a nerf, and maybe we just sort of accept that Harlequin's players are good?
You'll never know. It's unknowable.
It's unknowable.
I do agree. Most of the Harlequin players I know are usually faction specialists because it's such a small model range. No offense to a lot of the other players who have them and aren't dedicated to them. People get bored. People get bored playing with exactly the same like 4 models across entire editions. And so they move on and they play other Eldari factions. So you're absolutely right. The people who play them at the top level are usually absolute faction experts and are very scary.
It's an intimidating army too, like even to look at and go, can I even do that? Can I get this from the box to the table?
Well, exactly right. They're the Bretonians of 40K, right? Like they're the... If a dedicated, beautifully, like nothing I would say is more art-like than a thematically painted Harlequin's army. It's just beautiful.
And the only reason why I sort of have been entertaining this thought is because in more casual circles, which is sort of what I float around in, a lot of the Harlequins players are like, well, I don't get why everybody's so afraid because I barely win games. So it kind of makes me think like maybe that skill ceiling is extremely high, but maybe the floor is high as well.
Spot on once again. I feel like it's one of the most unforgiving armies in the game, but when you can leverage everything at the same time, it's dominant. It's oppressive even. The speed, the ferocity, the amount of mortal wounds. And then in addition, when things did go bad and you could rely on having a bunch of 4+ rerollable saves, should you need to just get yourself through the hard times, you had them. Like it wasn't very flexible, but what it did at times the best in the game.
So do we have any advice for more casual Harlequin players who might be feeling a little bit bummed out with all these changes?
Twilight for the win. Twilight and enjoy your life. And that's the Twilight Seder that I'm speaking to. And as for unit choices, like I haven't unpacked the points changes as much to be able to say with any authority, but you don't have many options. I'm sorry to say, like you have like
you probably units. Already have the models. That's actually the silver lining there is that you have the ability to change.
Exactly right. a lot more of your guns got better. Shuriken cannons. No armor of contempt. Shuriken cannons back on the menu, man. Mid-strength, rend 1 and rend 2 is where you want to be gun-wise moving forward, and Harlequins have definitely have quite a bit of that. So I'd be looking to that stuff.
That is something to talk about, is that with Armor Contempt, it kind of, I don't want to say nullify, but it certainly made a lot of weapon choices less efficient. That neg 2 AP didn't quite matter as much.
Yeah, exactly right. Because you're in cover with Armor Contempt. Just take your armor save. So a lot of guns just fell, well, a lot of offensive profiles just kind of fell out of the game. I mean, can you take a heavy bolter? Because a heavy bolter is a good profile again. So I'd be looking to that kind of stuff if you were trying to tool up your army for the new environment.
Look, and you can also apply that to just heavy bolter equivalent type stuff.
Exactly.
And so things like shuriken cannons and that kind of stuff are, listen, Eldari players out there, I know they're not heavy bolters, but they're heavy bolter like, you know?
Yeah.
enough for this example, you know, kind of thing that
absolutely.
They are. And also the weapons out there that are special abilities that get better if you roll a 6 or something like that. They're not wasted anymore.
Spot on.
You're going to feel better doing the tricks with Armor Contempt now only being reserved for the Leagues of Votan for their built-in ability. Mm. Yes. What else can we jump to as far as like points, big things? And Space Marines too. That's another thing to talk about or more about. What is the Space Marine army? What could it look like that would elevate it from, you know, the middle of tables?
Some other big winners for Space Marines. The Gladiator variants have finally gone down in points enough to be pretty good. The Gladiator Lancer, 125 points for a 12-wound toughness 8 chassis, is pretty good, but the Reaper is where I want. 150 points now with every upgrade. 24 strength 6 shots coming off the main gun that gets to sit in Devastator Doctrine all game now. So it's going to be Ren 2 all game. That thing for 150 points is exactly everything you want. Very resilient for the points cost, and the offense is absolutely cranked.
I like cranked offense.
Yeah, don't you just love it? But yeah, I legitimately think like it's really hard to get a bad choice in this. But Invicta Warsuits, 140 points, getting to stay in Devastator Doctrine once again, so that your autocannons being at neg 2 all game is very potent, as well as if you ended with the Twin Heavy Flamer instead. Another really good option now that got a bunch of buffs.
Back during the Iron Hands, fiasco, I also played 2 Condemptor Warsuits for the same reason. So awesome. That was a long time ago.
Phobos Dreadnoughts. I miss them. Maybe we'll see more.
Being able to sneak them up there, you know, get them up there. It's what I like is that, you know, you force people to, I like putting my opponents in situations to where they're not really sure where they should dedicate their larger weapons, their heavy weapons type things, and maybe get them to not focus down one thing or the other. So I get to go, I feel like I'm using more of my pieces more often. And you can do that now, I think, with some of the Space Marines to have some of those different profiles in the army, and also the threat of coming down with the Inceptors.
Yeah, the Inceptors are going to be a big deal for people to manage and figure out. The biggest thing for people to know is that they're in the 18-inch range. So if you have a screening unit and then you're 9 inches behind the screening unit, well, 9.1 inches behind the screening unit, you're good to go. You're golden. They can't get at you. So there are some things like that you can play with and try and, you know, get your brain thinking on how you can maneuver and work with this new altered game state.
Altered game state.
But so there are some big backhanded buffs here. The removal of Armor Contempt really helps a lot of armies. First and foremost would be the two that come to mind first is Drakari and Orcs. Both of them leverage high quantity speed and -1 and -2 base weapons, and which they were somewhat pushed out because they just bounce off a 2+ save all day, every day, nonstop, never going to make it through. Now, I mean, you know, meat's back on the menu. Get stuck back in there with your Beastnagger boys, your regular boys, your whatever, your commandos, your storm boys. They all actually do impactful damage again.
Oh, that's a good point. And talk about my beloved Sanguinary Guard. They kind of get worse without Armor Contempt. Not worse than they, I mean, not bad, all right? But I mean, slightly less dominant because you could sometimes rely on, especially when you're staging your turn 2 charge or whatever, about being in cover and having a lot more Sanguinary Guard models on the table.
Yeah, you just knew that, like, you're just going to bounce, 50% of the Rend 3 you were going to bounce off on a 4+?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy to think.
So now that's been slightly you know, worsened, it's going to have a big impact. I guess that's really where it's going, is he's going to have a huge impact. You know, and things, you know, like we weren't necessarily seeing as expected, like Death Guard tearing up the tables, even with all their changes, but they certainly got a heck of a lot better with that high toughness and then armor contempt. And then, you know, kind of put, if you've been struggling against armies like that, even if you don't see something immediately on the data slate as an improvement to you or a adjustment to them, the very nature of that is going to make your games go a little bit more positive for you.
So next biggest winner after generic Astartes and after Grey Knights as well. I need to tell you guys, Grey Knights got points reductions and a lot of their stuff is free. Free guns on your Grey Knight models. I think they still play for the Thunderhammers.
Free Psy Cannons.
Free Psy Cannons, free Silencers, baby, and no armor contempt. So your Rend 1, Rend 2, Rend 0 stuff is actually going to do something now. So I think they're one of the biggest winners. But the next one I wanted to talk about was Custodes. So Custodes came out of the gates about 12 months ago, give or take. And they were pretty, pretty good. They took a bunch of sweeping changes, and now a couple of them have been reneged. You now get OBSEC on everything that's not a bike again. So I'll just read this out verbatim. Change the third bullet point of the detachment abilities for Adeptus Custodes detachment to read Adeptus Custodes core infantry units and Athenema Psychana units, troop units, sorry, in Adeptus Custodes detachments gain the objective secured abilities. So your Wardens, Venatari, notably, and Alaris now have OBSEC again, which is a really big quality of life improvement. So you still don't get on the Virtus Praetors like you did straight out of the Codex, which I think is all for the better, but you get it back on all the infantry. And then the other dot point, and this is the one I think is possibly a bigger buff, if it's possible, change the Adeptus Custodes keywords in all instances on the Arcane Genetic Alchemy and Emperor's Allspice Stratagem to read infantry only. Now, that was the same, but there's one missing here, which was that all their best stratagems, that being the no rerolls, the transhuman, the altering your katars for Emperor's Chosen, were listed as being once per game. That is no longer the case. That has been removed. So all your best stratagems are still listed to only affect infantry, but you can use them all game now. So really big deal for not only getting infantry back on the table for Adeptus Custodes, because seriously, like the last 6 months, they've just been Codex Forge World again, which has been really quite disappointing because it was so strong. The G dub line was so strong out of the gates. Tanya, Custodes, back on the table. You excited?
Oh boy. I mean, if I'm going to be honest, I feel like Custodes are a little bit spoiled for me because of all of the sort of like rage that I encountered when playing them when they first came out. I'm going to need a little bit more time to sit on that and come to terms with it. So if you're one of those people who likes to rage on other people for playing whatever just happens to be top of the meta, maybe take a look at their army list.
It is kind of fun when you back into also having just an amazing army.
Like I painted it nice, you guys, and I was definitely playing Solar Watch, so can you just like ease off a little bit, please?
This scene has no chill. This scene knows no chill.
No, I know, but I that's like my little tip for building a positive community is like, I don't know, maybe like rein in that rage a little bit when there's a casual player just playing for fun.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe adopted in gospel.
I was gonna say, I don't know if it even requires a casual player. Just rein in the rage. Probably okay.
Yeah, I agree. Because as we know, in a few weeks, it all changes anyway.
Solid advice.
It could be your faction next. You never know.
It's true. Speaking of the factions,
nice segue. Very, very strong.
One big change in addition to the previous changes already that are all still, I believe, there. I don't think any of them have been removed. So we all know that the best way to play Necrons is Eternal Expansionist. Relentlessly Expansionist, Eternal Conquerors. And that being the everything has OBSEC, and you get a 6-inch pregame move on all your stuff. The OBSEC portion of that trait is now all-encompassing. So if you want to be OBSEC, you can be OBSEC, but you don't get anything else, a la the same as Hail of Doom is. Red, how do you feel about that?
I think it's a fair change. I think they didn't, and this is looking at the Warhammer Plus battle report, right? So if you've got the Warhammer Plus app or the, you know, you go online, you subscribe to it, you can watch this where they've done a fight versus, right? Yeah, I'm just casually throwing that out. That's called a throwback right there.
It's been a while, man.
It has been a minute. You know, if you have the app, you know, I know that there may or may not be people among the immediate four of us that don't use the app, but, you know, you can reference all that from this. So the Relentlessly Expansionist piece versus Eternal Conquerors was, I mean, that was the go-to for good reason. But the secondaries don't seem to have adjusted that much. They were only one of them was really taken down slightly. And then the other one, you know, it's you can't use core vehicles to score objectives, which really wasn't what was scoring those objectives anyways. And so the secondaries are still really strong. And so taking out the scout move just means that I'm not scoring as many secondary points on turn one, which I think people will appreciate. And I think it helps with the pacing of the game. I've personally never been for, you know, as we go back to that whole maneuver thing, right? Moving with intention of gaining some kind of tactical advantage. I've never been one that just, you can make decisions without any consequences or anything. And so peeling it back and kind of, I mean, if you want to call it a nerf, I'll call it a easy balance of making Eternal Conquerors an all-encompassing trait. I think it's fair. And being someone who's played Necrons with it, I totally understand. The secondaries are still there. There's still a lot of advantages to it. I don't think it pushes Necrons too far low. I don't think it keeps them too far up. I think it puts them right in a good spot, honestly. It's just a balance of other things after that.
So I remember before Eternal Conquerors really took over as the only viable choice, a lot of people playing Nihilak. What was that giving people?
It was a lot of melee bonuses.
Took a shooting army that could also fight marginally.
Oh, no, you guys are talking about Novok. I mean, Nihilak.
Sorry. It's one of the more defensive ones, and it actually can not just defensive, but it can take on the objectives pretty well. And so it's pretty well equipped for that. It kind of takes advantage of that. Eternal Conquerors almost feels it's not as skewed as Eternal Conquerors, but they do have the ability to take advantage of some of the objectives. And so that's what they pull off. I think it's a good approach that kind of takes.
Compromise. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, nice.
Could I keep going?
Yeah, man. Look, this is the faction content people need.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's also, I think, something to keep in mind. You know, this I said earlier that this isn't all just about the competitive scene. Arcs of Omen and the balance data slate is definitely oriented. The Arcs of Omen, you know, but tournament pack is definitely, this is a competitive orientation. But these balances, I don't think, should be taking anybody out of casual play by any means. I think that they're pretty well intended in a lot of cases. And I know that there's plenty of folks out there that'll disagree with my comment, but I do like some of the deliberation I see going into the development of this and the direction that they're trying to take it. I think it's pretty interesting. I think that, you know, while they may not have like a whole beta testing phase where everyone else like publicly can try out where they may or may not be taking things, I do think that how they're going about it and their refinement of it. I mean, we saw, okay, so initial ninth edition to Nachmans to Nephilim and now to Arcs of Omen. I think that we've seen some pretty steady developments. It hasn't necessarily built on itself every single step of the way, but I do think that it's been really interesting. And I think that as they've approached these different factions, it has kept a lot of things still in the game. It hasn't really discounted things, and they keep bringing things back into rotation, which I think is pretty fair.
Nice. What's next?
Next up, we have a small change to the way Asuriani works, and this actually is a backhanded buff to Harlequins also, because it's the same strat. It used to be that they changed Fire and Fade to be once per game. That is now no longer the case. You can use it as many times as you like. That is a stratagem that, if I'm not incorrect, that Harlequins can also use. So that is the only little buff here, the only silver lining for the Harlequins players. But hey, it is something.
Yeah, well, there you go. Take it what you can get. I think that's about all we have time for. We're actually maybe over our normal time.
There's a lot of, we didn't even talk about the mission changes, which I suppose will be next week's adventure now.
Oh, yeah. There's all kind of stuff to discuss, especially as people adjust to this. And that's the most interesting part, is like how does it actually affect folks? What does it affect what they bring on the table? Does it really affect what they bring on the table? I think the answer is, of course, yes. But to what degree? Be cool to unpack, and we're continuing to do that. But that's our show this week.
Hopefully you've enjoyed my voice.
This is one of those shows to where there's a lot of crunchy stuff. Like there's a lot of information download from to pick apart from what people are seeing out there on the internet. And I'm sure are from the designers, and then really what it means and how to feel about it. You know, hopefully we've hit the highlights of what matters to us. Let us know what matters to y'all.
And mate, if people don't like my voice, hopefully they can still respect the passion like Red does and tolerate me extensively.
A lot of respect. A lot of tolerance.
We have to have some sensitivity training.
Yeah, Adam.
The FDN sensitivity course. It'll be online for e-learning modules later this year.
Listen, we're going to be at the Las Vegas Open coming up later on this month. If you're around, please say what's up. I would love to hang out, see what's come by and check out some tables, see who's playing what, see your painted models that we've only seen online. Hopefully a lot of people can make it, but we'll be back next week. We'll see y'all then.
See ya.
Bye everybody.
Scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.